Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this meeting of Rydale District Council's Planning Committee. We're not expecting a fire alarm tonight, so if it does sound, it is for real. Please leave the building by the rear doors or the door to my right and congregate in the top car park. Ladies and gents, toilets are in the corridor along with water. Please can you ensure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent. We do have a number of speakers tonight. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Okay, moving on to the agenda. Agenda item one is apologies for absence. Have we received any apologies?
Apologies have been received from Councillor Cleary and Councillor Windress. Councillor Sanderson will substitute for Councillor Cleary. Councillor Raper will substitute for Councillor Windress.
Thank you. Agenda item two is the minutes of the meeting held on the 4th of July 2017. These have been updated and circulated for you this evening. You should have a hard copy in front of you, I believe. Do you agree that these are a correct record?
Yes.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Goodrick. I will put the minutes to the vote. Eight, four and one abstention, they are approved. Agenda item three is urgent business, and this evening I have one item of urgent business. The Tree Preservation Order Working Group needs to meet. Are there any councillors that would like to be on the working group? Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Yes, I wouldn't mind doing that job. I've done it in the past, so I'm okay there with it.
Council Mrs. Shales.
I'd be quite happy to be on it, Chairman.
Lovely. Thank you. Yeah. Councillor Maud.
Yes, I've also served on the Tree Preservation right as well. Thank you.
Okay. And I'd also like to be on it, so I think that's four. That's lovely. And I believe we'll be in contact with a date for the next meeting. Thank you. Agenda item four are declarations of interest. Do any councillors have any declarations to make? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Item seven, I've been lobbied by email.
Councillor Mrs. Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. Item six, I've been lobbied.
Councillor Maud.
Item number 11, it's personal, non-pecuniary, but it could be seen as prejudicial because I have a long association with Willington Village Hall and the playgroup. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hope. Thank you, Councillor Mott. Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Item 7, I've been lobbied by email.
Thank you. I'd like to declare a personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary interest in item 9 as I've been lobbied. Agenda item 5 is the schedule of items to be determined by committee. And agenda item 6 is application for Midsummer Cottage, Thornton Lane, High Marishes.
Thank you, Chairman. Obviously, this was the application that was deferred at the last meeting, in essence, to enable some traffic speed information to be gleaned in the vicinity of the proposed new access. The initial report to the planning committee set out the intention. And I hope members have received what was then a late report, which was circulated on Friday, which included some information which was radar speed survey information in the vicinity of the proposed access. The reason that that was actually carried out was because that the automatic traffic counters that had been placed in the road in the vicinity of the proposed new access had been damaged, and so there was no information to be gleaned from the automatic traffic counters at that point. That was clearly regrettable, because that was some work that the applicant had paid to be done with the agreement of the highway authority. In an attempt to move things forward, the highway authority engineer then undertook to do some radar speed survey information, which was manual information with radar speed gun. And on the late pages you have the first record of that information that was carried out on Wednesday the 26th of July. That was over a 2-hour period in wet weather, and you can see the implications of the average speeds that were calculated at that point. And I'll report the second set of survey results to you just in a moment, which were carried out last Friday in dry weather. The second set of results that were carried out were actually carried out at the point where the vision splay starts. So it was at the end of the 80-metre set of the vision splay furthest south from the access point. The first set of traffic speed results were actually carried out at the point where the speed counters were actually marked in the road, and that was a little bit further away from the junction, at a point where traffic is actually accelerating away from the bend in the road. And so this is probably the main reason why the results that I'll give you in a few moments are actually reporting slower speeds than are actually on the late page information. So I'll just quote directly from Stephen Boyne's email, which he sent to me late on Friday. Sadly, it arrived too late for the late pages, so I couldn't include it then. But he talks about the radar survey done today, taking guidance from the Department for Transport document vehicle speed measurement on all-purpose roads at 80 metres south of the proposed access centre line for vehicles travelling northbound towards Summertree Bridge, was taken for 100 vehicles in free flow over a period of 1 hour 10 minutes, commencing at 9:55, ending at 11:05 off-peak in dry weather conditions. I think probably at this point it's important to say that because this was manually done, the person holding the radar gun was excluding slow-moving traffic such as farm vehicles or the like, which might otherwise have swayed the results, whereas automatic vehicle counters just count everything. The mean speed dry weather was 20.8 miles per hour, and adjusted for 85 percentile speed in dry weather, that equates to nearly 23 miles an hour. The equivalent wet weather speed is used for the purposes of assessing visibility against traffic speeds, which are with a deduction of 2.4 miles per hour is applied. This therefore gives an equivalent wet weather mean speed of 18.4 miles per hour, and an 85 percentile speed of 20.4 miles per hour. Obviously, these are all based on variables and mean speeds, Chairman. Consequently, the 85 percentile wet weather speed of 20.4 miles per hour is well below the 30 mile per hour design speed, which design DRMB, so manuals and bridges, recommends a visibility distance of 90 metres should be available. Therefore, the measured visibility of 80 metres is considered acceptable for the purposes of traffic light to be associated with this development, and generally consistent with my observations given in his initial consultation response on the 13th of April. He goes on to say, the automatic traffic counter tubes are positioned 16 metres north of this radar survey point. They are still in place today, complete with data recorder. These routes will not, however, be available for 2 days' planning committee meeting. The above, therefore, should be used to report to members, which is the radar speed gun meeting. Please advise if you require a copy of the survey and my calculations for further background. Going on from that, I have in fact spoken to the engineer myself today on the phone, just to confirm in terms of those speeds, which are obviously quite low, what the required visibility splay would actually be. And at that speed, you're almost down to manual for streets as opposed to a country road. and the required vision splay would be anywhere between 33 and 45 metres, which is obviously appreciably less than what is actually available when measured on the site, which is 80 metres. So with that in mind, we are recommending approval of the application, which was the original recommendation. If there are any questions, Chairman, I'll try and answer those questions as best I'm able to with a rather technical set of information before us.
Would Mr. Daniel Bland like to speak? Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, members of the board, chairman, good evening. My name is Daniel Bland and I'm here to represent the applicant, Mr. Verity. As an architect, I've worked throughout Derbyshire and Yorkshire and specialise in the repair and reuse of traditional buildings. I'm very familiar with the high value of our natural and built heritage. The farm group, formerly referred to as Summertree Farm, is now three individual ownerships. You will note in information presented before you that Midsummer Cottage is a holiday cottage located between the two residential dwellings and until last year was accessed via Summertree Cottage, owned by Mr. and Mrs. Eldridge. The applicant, Mr. Verity, purchased Midsummer Cottage and the surrounding land in October 2016 after it was subject to a High Court repossession order separating it from the adjacent property. This effectively made the application site landlocked and its continued use virtually impossible. The proposed presented as part of our application is simply an independent access to serve Midsummer Cottage, the associated land and the agricultural outbuildings to the rear. The cottage will remain as a holiday accommodation and the land will continue to be used as stabling and grazing. To ensure the long-term use and sustainability of Midsummer Cottage whilst in third-party ownership, an independent access is paramount. Throughout the application process, we've been proactive in working with Rowdale District Council and the North Yorkshire Highways Authority in open discussions and amending the proposals as recommended to address any concerns raised. We acknowledge the safety concern raised by the Parish Council and objector and consider, as the authority on the matter, the response we've just heard from Gary in response to the further speed survey carried out by North Yorkshire Highways to be conclusive in the proposed access presents no further risk or concern to highway safety as the adjacent access into Summertree Cottage or into Summertree Farm holiday cottage and caravan site. The corner of Thornton Lane and Summertree Bridge, as we've just heard, are considered to be traffic calming measures, reducing the speeds to the low 20 mile an hour. In summary, we ask the committee to consider the repossession, sale and subsequent landlocking of Midsummer Cottage as a material consideration and approve the proposed access to safeguard the long-term use and viability of the property. I have known the applicant, Mr. Verity, for some 20 years as a personal family friend and confirm he is not a mass housing developer looking to develop the land. He is a genuine, hard-working man looking to return to the North Yorkshire area. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Yes, just to highlight for members who may not have been here at the last meeting, Councillor Sanderson probably very familiar with the site. Having said that, Councillor Raper's not here yet, so I'll probably be boring you all again, mainly because I think most of you were here last time. But this is it says Thornton Lane, but it's actually the road to Moulton, and if you go far enough, you pick up the A169, which is the Pickering to Moulton Road. Coming from the Moulton direction, you head along Thornton Lane to this very sharp bend and head up Thornton Lane, and this then leads on to Moulton Gate at Thornton Dale if you go far enough. Just at this point here, there's a little bit of a, I'll call it a bridge feature, which is on the road. There is a watercourse. And at this point here, there's a group of buildings, which is the group of buildings that we're actually referring to. There's also a public right-of-way goes along there, and I think there's another public right-of-way comes along in this direction here. So there are some footpaths going off into the countryside. This is the view heading northwards towards the application site, and you see the road warning sign in this direction here. The corner's just behind you. You can just see in the distance the group of farm buildings. And this is the location of the proposed vehicular access point just south of the complex of buildings. You can see the existing accesses here. And this lane here does actually have some road markings as you're coming along back in the opposite direction to sort of give traffic really warning of the bridge feature. And this is the location of the proposed vehicular access. This is the view back the other way. This is the feature that I'm calling the bridge in this area here. So there is a sort of almost a slow stop give way arrangement with vehicles meeting each other. And this is long looking south along Thornton Lane towards the application site. So this is further north in the Thornton direction, looking back towards the application site. So again, you've got the complex of buildings on the right hand side, and this is the point where I think the public footpath comes out here. So sometimes you also do get walkers along there. And this is the precise point of the vehicular access, which doesn't really show you an awful lot. It's a small group. There's a small section of hedgerow that comes out in this area here, which the original report describes as just over a 5 metre section of hedge. But in compensation, then additional hedgerow planting is then planted on the Resurn side of the accessway. That's it, Chairman.
Does any councillors have any questions for officers? Okay. Councillor Sanderson, would you like to take this item as ward member?
Yes, I can present this. I've absolutely no problem with the access road, apart from what I flagged actually with Gary last week. And just to put this in perspective, when I read the officer report last month, the first thing I went to was not the recommendation, but actually the highways report, which was within the report. And it's the first thing I looked at. And this is my only area of concern. I heard the debate at the parish council meeting, and everyone was concerned about the proximity to the bridge, which has been the scene of quite a few accidents. Residents from Thorntondale, other than the parish council, have also highlighted it, that they've got concerns about the highways entrance. Highways came up with some alterations to the road about 5 years ago, and thankfully since then we've had no accidents in recent times because of the stop box that Gary showed you. But what the parish council felt was that there was a sort of delicate state of balance that had to be maintained here. I obviously support the officer's view from Highways because he's the expert in the matters, and it would be absolutely folly to disregard his expert opinion. However, I'd like to put a few questions that I've asked to him. I've had quite a considerable conversation with him. So his recommendation for a safe speed is between 25 and 30 northbound travel. And he found that that first radar gun, that it was within that tolerable speed limit. Now, I'm not a fast driver, I'm not a slow driver, and I don't hang around. But when I came home from Malton the other day, as I went over the bridge, I looked at my speed and it was 35 miles an hour. And that was just going Mrs. Plinkety Plonkety, not hanging around. So I was concerned and I spoke to Highways. This was before the planning meeting last month. I asked them how the survey was undertaken, and I was told that the speeds had been measured for an hour during the middle of the day. And my concern is that during the middle of the day, you get Mr. and Mrs. Plinkety Plonkety out to kind of look at the view and do the shopping. You don't get the same traffic that you do in the morning when people are going to work from the homes, which they do every day. They're very familiar with the road and they're trying to get to a train at Malton Station. You get the picture. So I was a bit concerned about that. And I said that I'd have liked to have seen the measurements taken at a time when people were travelling to work, you know, offices or whatever. I was reassured by the decision of this committee last week and delighted to see the black tubes down so quickly. I thought it was really important that we got a measurement over the whole 24-hour day cycle, you know, and for a longer length of time. So that was great to see that this committee made that decision last month. The late papers came through, and the wet weather measurement was 28.4 miles an hour, implying that the dry weather measurement would be approximately 2.4 miles per hour higher. In other words, 30.8 miles per hour. And I still didn't have a problem with that. You know, does it matter a mile higher. But again, I was somewhat surprised and curious to know how the results had been taken. And the tubes hadn't been used. We'd had two measurements taken for an hour and 10 minutes, twice, showing that the levels were well under. But nothing to say what was happening when people were going to work. So basically, my concerns now are the time of day when the measurement was taken, which was a benign type of time of day when people weren't likely to be under pressure. And, of course, the other way that's been taken is with speed guns. Now, we all know that when somebody points a speed gun at you, what do? I mean, you don't speed up, do you? You slow down. So I think it's a great shame that last month this committee deferred for more detailed measurements of the speed flow, and they haven't been supplied. I understand that the speed tubes were broken, but after talking to Stephen yesterday, he did say that the weak speed of that second week were due imminently. In fact, they could have been due yesterday, he said, up to 5 days. That's what he said to me on Friday. So, what I'd like to see happen, if this is possible, I don't know if it is, but I'd like to see this committee make an in principle decision to accept the proposal, because other than the speed of cars travelling, I don't have a problem with it at all, but I'd like to see it clarified by that tube method, which measures the whole part of the day and the whole week. I know that it's not as accurate as a speed gun. It can be, the officer said it was up to 3% either way, but I do think having that different time scale of journeys to work would make a difference. So that's where I am, Chairman. Thank you.
Gary, do you want to just come back?
Yeah, just to come back, I had a similar sort of conversation.
Are we having debate?
It doesn't matter. I just wanted to come back on the point that you just raised. In fact, the just to clarify the level of accuracy with which a highway engineer considers automatic counter speeds to be accurate. They're generally considered to be accurate within to 3 or 4 miles per hour rather than percent. But the essence of the automatic counters, the problem with it is that for whatever reason they were damaged when they were put down, and that wasn't discovered until the information came to be collected from the automatic counters. The counters remain down, but repaired. But the dilemma is that we have a situation where the count information has not yet been retrieved from the counters. It won't yet be retrieved until later this week at the earliest. And there then is a time lag between that information then being appraised and assessed as to what it's actually giving you out at the other end of the process. And that is some time yet. Steve Boyne was unable to give me what that time would be. The dilemma that we have from the applicant's point of view is that they are aggrieved that the determination date for this application was back in February. We've delayed that, and if we delay any further, if there is any further delay, then the applicant loses their right of appeal against us not making a planning decision, because that expires on the 8th of August, which is only next Tuesday. At this stage, it's not looking to me as though we're going to get the traffic count information by that date. So we're sort of being forced into we're having to make a decision tonight, really, Chairman, because we run the risk of the applicant losing their appeal rights. As it stands, on the basis of the additional information, I can only report to you what the highway engineer has reported to me, which is his personal view that radar survey information is more accurate because it's involving a human being at the site, discounting traffic that you wouldn't normally measure because it's going to give you perverse information in your calculations, then the highway engineer's position is that the radar gun information, albeit for 100 vehicles over a condensed period, is actually more accurate. And so that's their recommendation, Chairman.
Councillor Sanderson.
I think Gary really summed it up there. I think he summed up the whole decision with that sentence: we're forced into making a decision. And for me, a decision where safety is involved is really a very, very difficult decision and a very serious decision. When I talked to Steve on Friday, he did say his back was against a wall, and he did say that he would have liked to have seen the 4 weeks data that was rolled over. So I just wanted to put that. That's how I understood from speaking to him.
Would any other councillor like to speak? Councillor Mrs. Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. This committee did actually look at this seriously and wanted some more information, which we diligently asked for. And it is disappointing that information has been skewed in some way. I hear what the local member says, and it is alarming when we as planners don't always agree with highways, but we often don't agree with highways. We often don't think that they are right. We often want to go against their decisions, and we often approve things when we aren't happy. That happens probably every other meeting that we attend. Unfortunately, we are always told that we are not the experts and we have to listen to what has been given to us. Having said that, it's been appraised. We have a duty. Our officers have taken that information and looked at it. And as a planning committee, I think we've got to make a decision tonight. And so on that basis, I will move approval.
Any other councillors wishing to speak? No. Well, I will second the recommendation of approval. So I'll now put that to the vote. That's 6-4 and 3 abstentions. The application has been approved. Moving on to agenda item 7, application at Linton Wald Farm, Wald Road, West Lutton.
Thank you, Chairman. I just have one update with regard to the officer report in relation to this application. As members are aware, major applications are required under the regulations to require a certain amount of basic information relating to surface water disposal. And the lead local flood authority, the County Council, had requested some additional information in that regard, which was duly supplied. And I can confirm that the lead local flood authority have appraised the information relating to runoff, flood risk and the like, and have confirmed they now have no objection to the application on flood risk grounds, Chairman. So that matter is resolved. As you'll be aware, this application is for two relatively large linked pig finishing buildings, and the reason the application is before you for determination tonight is it's another one of those that's a major application just over the floor area limit. We've had no adverse reaction from any quarter. The site is very isolated. I think probably some of you will maybe be familiar with where it is, but it's not a site that if you drove around you'd find it very easily. You really have to be looking for this site to find it, and it's high up on the Wolds in an area where even the access track leading to it is some considerable distance in length, so from public vantage points there are no public rights of way or anything of that nature that you can see the group of farm buildings. Nevertheless, it is in the Wolds, and clearly that's an area of high landscape quality, and we do like to make sure that when we get applications for farm buildings that they meet our normal policy. And this is the access track leading to the site. You're already some distance off the highway at this point. The access track leads down towards the main group of farm buildings. And as you can see, the group of farm buildings lies in these gentle undulations in the wold. So from further vantage points, you really can't see the group of farm buildings at all, really. The thing that really strikes you with regard to this shot is the group of farm buildings, how it sits and nestles in the group of trees that are surrounding the site, which is the main landscape feature. And to some extent, the driver for why the siting of this particular site for the buildings has been chosen. This is a view looking back the other way. So the access road is over the brow of that little undulation. You can just see the profile of the farm buildings. I was just showing you the view of from the opposite approach direction. And this is some of the trees, the other side of the group of the farm complex, which some of which are very close to the group of farm buildings. I'll concentrate on that vehicle there because it's in this area that the proposed farm buildings would be located, so they're in a slight depression in the landscape. And just on the foreground here you'll see a stone track, which is the continuation of the farm track that goes past the group of farm buildings, which you'll see on page 17. There's also another tree at this point here which it's useful to bear in mind because you can see where that sits in relation to the group of farm buildings. And this is that track, which again is going back up another hill. So that's the tree. That's the little farm vehicle that I was just pointing to there. And the farm buildings would sit in this part of the landscape here. So they're in this slight depression. And this is just panning back down to the access track. So the access track almost executes a right-hand bend here and goes back up to the farm. So again, you can see the location of the farm vehicle there. This is the view looking back up the valley that I was just showing you from the higher level. So the farm tracks here, and you're looking back out into this part of open countryside, but it gives you a feel of the way the wold sort of gently undulate. And this is a view looking back down from the high point. So again, you get a view of this tree and the nestling of the buildings in the wold. And this is on the site, and this is the farm track which is going round in the corner here. So the buildings sit here. I mean, the main aim of this was to avoid any tree loss and to look at the area of least impact. And so that's why we think this slightly. Normally, we try and group buildings tightly together to minimise the impact on the landscape. But I think there are good reasons here why this group of buildings is being asked to be positioned slightly further afield than you might normally be asking you to consider. But I think I haven't got anything more to report, Chairman. I think there's a speaker.
Would Mr. Sam Harrison like to come?
Thank you all for the opportunity to speak. I'm here this evening representing our client, Mr. Lee, of Linton Wold Farm, who seeks to expand and diversify his existing farming enterprise. The essential need for diversification within the arable sector is generally accepted and unquestioned throughout the UK. This proposal would aid in securing Linton Wold Farm's financial future, offering a diversified source of income away from the currently unstable realms of arable farming. The application before you has been subject to careful examination by our professional consultees, none of which have offered any objections whatsoever. Our client has wished to express that he is present this evening and is happy to address any outstanding questions or queries that may be raised by the committee. This application has a clean bill of health and an officer recommendation of approval. It is therefore requested that planning permission is granted. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any councillors have any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. I notice the size of the building is 15.8 metres by 52.4. I'm always amazed on the walls when we have these farm applications how big the actual permitted development is. Can you just remind me, Gary, because it's a bit since I've done this, but what would the permitted development be without application?
The limitation, there are various limitations on permitted development rights for agricultural buildings, which aren't all just floor area. But the general limitation for floor area, I think, is still 465 square metres, which is the old 5,000 square foot building. So that's one of the criteria on larger farmsteads. There are sometimes other criteria relating to heights of buildings in proximity to aerodromes or proximity of buildings to classified roads. Sometimes there's a setback distance. So there are quite a number of permitted development limitations, but the floor space one, I think, is still the 465. I'd need to give you that. I'm just guesstimating that now. There's two here. Each building is... I haven't got a calculator on me, really. We should have given you that. It's 16 by 50, so it's about 800 square metres each, roughly. I mean, I think for in terms of landscape impact, it's probably less the floor area of the building, but the height of them. And they're actually quite low-profile buildings. They're 3.3 metres to eaves and 5.5 to ridge. Sometimes a lot of the agricultural buildings we get, particularly storage buildings, you know, if it's for hay or straw, the new mega bale sort of things, you can get quite a lot of height. So sometimes a building that's permitted development sort of size, it's the height of the building that you're seeing rather than the extent of it.
Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Chairman. The service roads, are they substantial enough to take up all the extra traffic that's going to be on this?
No adverse reaction from the Highway Authority, but the road leading down to the farm is metal. No. But I mean, I think in terms of the service, you're talking about the service road, they are metal roads. They're quite high grade.
Because there's a vast amount of pigs going to be in there and they need moving in and out, don't they?
Councillor Burke.
Thank you, Chairman. This committee knows that I take an interest in the colour of new farm buildings. Darker the better, and I just would like a clarification on the condition. It just says a condition is recommended accordingly. What does that exactly mean, that we are conditioning?
I'd anticipate that this will have a darker roof colour to start off with. I mean, in terms of the actual building building drawings, which are shown on page 20, they don't show any particular detail of the walling, but the lower level is a concrete block level, and then there'll be some form of cladding around it. I'd guess we'd be looking in this location for some sort of olive green and slate grey colour, because that's what recesses things down into the landscape.
Just come back there. It just says a condition is recommended accordingly. It's not very specific.
Well, no, it isn't. But, I mean, the fact that they then have to apply to discharge the conditions, that's what we would be looking for. If this was on a skyline, we'd probably be looking for a very pale colour or a dove grey or something like that. But in this location, it'll be something to recess into the landscape, so it'll be a darker colour.
Any further questions? Now we're going to debate, and Councillor Sean Udine, are you the board member?
Forgive me, because this is only my second or third planning committee meeting. From what I've seen, the building is beyond what's normally permitted. However, its location and its masking from general view, I'm actually quite happy to support this application.
Thank you. Any other councillor wishing to speak? Councillor Maud.
I'm happy to second this application. Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded, so I'll put that to the vote. The application has been approved. Agenda item 8, which is application at the Old House, Main Street, Ampleforth.
Thank you. This particular application is located within the conservation area in Ampleforth and is in the old part of the village. In fact, those of you will know that the boundary between the National Park and Rydell goes straight through the old part of the village. It's one of those slightly odd boundaries. You think, who decided for it to go there? But it does. And we are where we are. This particular house, I think it's probably best for me to show you the photographs. I don't have any late updates to show you, and the drawings of what's proposed are on the agenda papers. But this is the view from the pavement, so I think it's roughly down the middle of the road is the boundary. But this is the property, which is now one property, and as you can see, is linear to the road, so it's at 90 degrees to the road, and it drops downhill, so the land levels are falling away from the footway as you go into the site. And we believe this was originally three cottages, and the position of the chimneys suggests that probably is the case, long since been converted into one dwelling. And it's a typical Ampleforth property in the sense that it's got random stone walling, clay pantile roof, a combination of sash and casement windows, all timber. And I think aside from this relatively modern addition at some point in the past, which is an open gabled porch, the property retains this very simple roof form. No dormers or anything of that in terms of ornamentation. And that's what we have. It's typical of many Ampleforth properties. There does tend to be a pattern in Ampleforth of properties either actually back edge of footpath with roofs parallel to the road, or as is the case just in this vicinity, you then have a group of buildings which are 90 degrees to the road and going down the hill, and this is what we've got here. This is just looking straight down the driveway of the property. You can see a more modern sort of rendered garage with pantile roof at the back there. The lean-to extension that's been proposed is at the back of the property and comes out in this area here. And its roof form follows the plane of the roof of the main house, as opposed to the gable one, which is actually probably slightly more at odds with the house, but nevertheless that's what's been added to the property in the past. And this is just a view looking as you walk along the footway. So at the footway level you're looking down and over the garden of the property. So although it's set back, you would actually catch a glimpse of the lean-to in this area here, but it's as the report suggests, quite a long way back into the site. This is a view panning down National Park, Rydell, in terms of planning authority. And you get a feel for the way the properties are either back edge or you've got gaps in between. So that's the character of the area. And this is just another view of panning across. This is the view looking back the other way. So you get a feeling of the openness. And in fact, through this gap, you can see the AONB hills in the background. So it's quite a dynamic view, higher levels on this side of the road, which is the national parks on this side as you're looking back east. And this is the adjacent property, which is a listed building, and it's that property, the occupier, which has objected to the application, expressing concerns about the as the report sets out, but also about the setting of the listed building. From this point here, the extension you wouldn't see. So in terms of setting, I think we don't feel that there's a setting issue with the listed building. And indeed, your conservation officer raises no objection to the application, either in terms of its design or impact on the conservation area. So that's really it, Chairman. It's a fairly modest extension, but we have had an objection, and that's why it's before you tonight.
Are there any questions for the officer? No. We haven't got a local ward member here tonight. Does anybody want to take this one? Councillor Goodrick.
I'll take it because it happens to be my county division, so I'll take it. I really don't have a problem with this. The extension which you suggested is very subservient to the property. It's set well back off the road. I don't think it'll have a huge impact on the street scene. And I question whether it'll have any huge impact on the listed building, and if I thought it did, I'd be saying no, let's not do it. But actually, I'm quite comfortable with this, so I'll move it for approval.
Councillor Burr.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I would like to second this. I think that when we look at the pictures and see the street scene, I don't think that it will have any impact. As my colleague said, it's quite a modest extension, and if it was any detriment, we probably would be shouting about it. So I think that we'll take a pass on this one, and we'll say approval. Thank you.
Councillor Sanderson, did you indicate?
Thank you, Chairman. Linton's done the job for me. I used to teach at the little school at the back. I don't have a problem with it. I think it's a matter of course.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded, so I'll put that application to the vote. Thank you. The application has been approved. So we'll move on to agenda item 9, which is application at Manor Farm, Langhill, Birdsall.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to confirm the header page of the report states no reviews received to date from both the countryside officer and environmental health officer. I'm not sure why that is the case, Chairman, because the environmental officer is actually referred to explicitly in the report as not objecting, and neither does the countryside officer in terms of any ecology or landscape impacts. I picked up from the declarations that there probably had been some lobbying, and I think that was probably from the local member, which I might allude to later. I think at this stage I'm aware that we've got two speakers on this particular application, and I just wanted to draw members' attention to the photographs that I'll show you just in a moment in relation to the plans, which are on page 43. And the plan on page 43 shows the location of the proposed building, which is located towards the rear of an existing group of buildings. As you can see from the location plan on page 43, that in addition to the complex of farm buildings, there are one or two other dwellings in the locality, notably Manor Farm Bungalow to the south, Manor Farm Cottages to the south, Manor Farm House, which I think is now converted to two properties further to the east. And then further to the east of that, you get a feel for other pairs of semi-detached properties. The scale on the plan usefully gives you some indication of the distances there that they are from the main group of farm buildings. But the location for this particular building is located, you just see, this is at the back of the site, looking, and the application site is in this area here, aside from the access, which we'll show you in a moment. So the site backs onto a substantial area of trees, and the proposed building would be sited in this area here. This is a view looking west to east. And as you pan across, you can see this is the first of the buildings located towards the rear of the site, and the proposed building would be located behind this building. Viewed from the proposed access point, which is the westernmost access, the building would be roughly, or the end of the building would be roughly here. So it's behind, this building is actually in front of the one I was just showing you. There are a group of buildings adjacent. So this is the nearest building visible from the roadway. And this is the group of three buildings that you can see on the location plan, which are but the western edge of the site. So In grouping terms, this really is doing what we ask people to do, which is site things close together so that there's no breakout into open countryside or wider landscape impact. The scale of the building is such that it's very well screened by the existing agricultural buildings. This is the view looking back down that access track. So these are the buildings that are on the western edge of the site, and this is the first of the dwellings that you see opposite. So that's the nearest dwelling, I would suggest. I think reference has been made to Manor House, Chairman, but they're some distance to the east, and our judgment is that, if anything, they're more affected by the existing complex of buildings than the proposed new ones. I'm aware that I think the local member was going to express an interest, Chairman, but isn't here tonight anyway. And I think he may have emailed other people in advance of the meeting. So I think at this stage I'll let the speaker speak, and if people want me to refer to that, then I will do.
Thank you. So speaking on behalf of the Parish Council is Sue Hart.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Sue Hart, and I've come to represent the Birdsall and North Grimston Parish Council. We had a site meeting at the proposed site for Mr. James Illingworth's new agricultural building on the 8th of June. At this site meeting, our parish council have voted unanimously, and you wouldn't say that one, against this proposal. There were abstentions from Lady Middleton, the chairperson, because she has interest in Birdsall Estates Company Limited, of which Mr. Illingworth is a farm tenant. And Mr. Ben Stone, whose architectural firm drew up the plans for the proposed agricultural building. The Parish Council's objections were that it was very near to the property, which is no longer a farmhouse, this is Manor House, but a let residential property. We know from past usage that there has been access passing by the front driveway, which is not this one on the picture, of this residential property. There have been cattle movements and large straw wagons. And we feel this usage may increase and be a danger to the residents, some of whom are children and dogs. We were in fact informed by Mr. Stone, the architect, that large straw wagons would be using that access point. The proposed building is of a height whereby it would be very visible from the upstairs main bedroom of the residential property and would overshadow the garden and ruin the amenity of the garden. We feel there may be extra flies, odours and noise, and we strongly disagree with the environmental health impact report. It would be very close to a pleasant woodland walk and therefore impinging on this amenity. And we would ask that a tree survey is carried out regarding the ancient trees to investigate the effect the building would have on the roots and the branches of these trees, as it is very close to it. The Parish Council felt that a better site would be running parallel to the existing farm buildings on the west side. This would be near the existing farmhouse and farm employees' houses, and access would be directly onto the road, and it is the access that you've been shown. Whilst the Parish Council do not object to a new agricultural building of this size and scale, they do strongly object to the proposed site due to its unsuitable location. And if the committee are minded to approve this planning application, the Parish Council must ask you to make it a conditional upon access from the west and to carry out a tree survey. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've now got the applicant, Mr. James Illingworth.
Chairman and committee, good evening. My name is James Illingworth and I'm the farmer submitting this application for a new cattle and straw building. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk. My family and I have lived in Birdsall for three generations. I live in Birdsall, I live on the farm, and I enjoy and look after the environment locally. I want this building to be correct in every way. Its size, height, function and aesthetics are all very important to me. Agriculture continues to advance and change, and the needs of the farmer change. Most other local farms have undertaken modifications to their buildings to cater for this change and to survive in volatile markets. A good example is my neighbouring Birdsall Estate Farm, who have significantly adapted their farming methods. In their case, a major investment in large cattle buildings and outdoor accommodation nearby. My farm and proposal is much smaller, and we work with traditional breeds of beef-rearing cattle. My cows run with calves at foot, which is a cyclical process. At different periods throughout the cycle of producing beef, there are different accommodation requirements. You may appreciate that this requires multiple areas to house and stock cattle at varying times in the year. Manor Farm is of a traditional nature, and therefore many of the buildings are small and indeed nowadays are inadequate for modern machinery and farming methods. Running cattle in small antiquated buildings is difficult, costly and outdated. It is necessary for the future of this agricultural business to adapt and to build a facility that is more efficient, practical and welfare friendly. Please note the nearby woodland is mature woodland only, not of an ancient classification. The proposed access point, main access point, is there. That is where the straw vehicles will pass through, and that remains unchanged, as the gentleman correctly pointed out. The parish council have made more than one factually incorrect comment in their objections, one stating the access road is near the dwellings. Primary access remains unchanged through that gateway on the picture there. Another inaccuracy concerns the flies and smells. Please be aware that at the southern end of this village, the majority...
30 seconds left.
Sorry, okay. My business supports 3 full-time members of staff, including myself, and several ancillary businesses who support and supply local services to my business. I consider this building essential to secure my farm and the future employment of its staff. I ask, can you please support this application, and by implication, my business and the local rural economy? Thank you very much.
Without wishing to labour the point, Chairman, the plan on page 44 shows in red and blue the land which is controlled by the applicants, and the only access which is actually shown under control is the western access. The other access which runs along the side of those farm buildings, which also is where the plan shows 1 and 2 manor house, what you see one on that plan, isn't actually shown as being within the applicant's ownership or control. So very much the Highway Authority and the Planning Authority are working on the basis of any activity associated with this development being some distance away from Manor Farm, or Manor House rather. Sorry, the plan on page 43 is a better plan, just to show you the red and the blue.
Is there any questions for the officer? No. Okay. Council Mod. Put your microphone on.
Yeah. Farm out, how it's situated, you know, how the residential units are situated.
Is on this photograph here, which is the photograph along the line of the last of the existing buildings, and you can see the batteries have gone, Chairman. Not to stand up. This is looking west to east along the back of the existing buildings. You've just seen the background in the distance. Through the open part of the farm building, that's where Manor House is. It's some distance away. So if you look at the plan on page 43, the nearest point of the new building to the Manor House, as it's shown on that plan, is 60 metres away. It's a considerable distance. I mean, I think in terms of a building which has heights are set out in the report, I think of an apex of 7.5 metres and eaves of 5. The thought that would in any way overshadow or have an amenity impact because of its scale and position, I think it's just something which we wouldn't be able to agree with as officers.
Any further questions? I'll move into debate. We don't have a local member. Does any council wish to take this one? Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. When I first looked at this, I could see no problem whatsoever. And then when you read the report, it does throw up some worries and some concerns. I mean, as we all know, we hugely support expansion and diversification for local farmers. And local farmers' needs and needs of residents have to be viewed equally. And in villages, small villages, everybody's got to live side by side and in harmony, we hope. And it's not that I've really got too much of an issue with this, but it's so sad that the parish voted unanimously not to support this, in not when villages are normally very, very supportive of their friends, of their colleagues, of people who are working in the village. And it's, I find it disappointing that they haven't reached an amicable conclusion with this. However, I guess the red line shows the area that the farmer owns the land, and there has been talk about access, which I was thinking probably a better access to avoid the houses, but that is the access that we've got. So, as I say, I have no problem with it, but I just think that it's really, really sad that the whole parish isn't behind this, and you know, it may cause some upset, etc., because people obviously in the parish do feel aggrieved. I won't be not supporting this, but as I say, it's just very strange that the parish council have got these views, and it's very disappointing in a small village. I just wanted to bring that up.
Councillor Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. I think we see this all the time, where parish councils have a different opinion to what's put forward in the planning committee papers. And, you know, there can be a variety of reasons for it. We had a proposal in the National Parks recently in my division, where a farmer wanted to move into the future. He had the same problems. Machinery has got bigger. He has to make a living. The farm's been there for centuries. You know, I can't see what the problem is, and I'm happy to propose it. Thank you.
Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. My colleague nearly said what I wanted to say, but we've just passed a great, massive pig unit. This is very in keeping with the area, and the farmer there trying to get on and make things right, and I'm sure he will do if there's any problems. But and as my colleague said about the parish council, yes, they have a right to have their voice heard, but I just can't see any problem at all with this application. And did you move it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll second it then. Thank you.
Any further comments? No, it has been moved and seconded, so I'll put the application to the vote. The application has been approved. Agenda item 10, application at land adjacent to 42 Vine Street, Norton.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I was just looking for the update sheet there. As you'll have seen from the officer report, there was an issue that was yet to be resolved in relation to concerns that had been raised by I think a number of people actually and a number of consultees in terms of the use of Vine Street, the calibre of Vine Street in terms of its characteristics, because the site is actually accessed off towards the end of Vine Street in Norton. And Vine Street is an unusual highway. I think Councillor Shields is nodding there. But it's one of those which, when I show you the photographs in a moment, you'll probably appreciate more when I show you that Vine Street, a little bit like Plum Street, is one of those streets that hasn't got a proper turning area at the end of it, so the road just stops. And that obviously can cause issues when, you know, vehicles get to the end of it and then struggle to turn or manoeuvre properly. Particularly in a context where there may be on-street parking, and particularly on-street parking issues in what is, I think we'd all describe as a densely developed area of terrace property. Nevertheless, we've got the application, and during the processing of that application, there was an issue relating to accessibility of emergency vehicles to the site. It was a matter raised in the parish council, sorry, the town council's comments when they actually objected to the application. I think they made two comments. One, that they felt that it was perhaps an overdevelopment of the site, but the second one related to emergency vehicle access. And that was a matter that was still under consider by North Yorkshire Fire and Rescue when the agenda came to be put to bed last Monday, and hence a recommendation of being made at the meeting in anticipation of getting those comments. And really, if members are just able to quickly look at page 52, you get a flavour of where the site is there in relation to Commercial Street in Scarborough Road. Commercial Street is the larger of the roads at the bottom of the map there, and you actually access into the site perpendicular to Commercial Street, and then Vine Street turns off to the right and carries on to where it peters out, where there is some more modern properties shown on that plan as Walnut Green, which are actually accessed off Bowling Lane, so the roads don't link up at all, and the road just stops at a wall at that point. And this site is actually located at the end of Vine Street, so it's right at the end there. And at the moment, there are four terrace properties which occupy what I would call the front third of the site, none of which have any off-road parking. So as with many of these other properties on Vine Street, everybody who lives in there, if they've got a car, has to park on Vine Street, so it can at certain times get very congested. If I turn to page 53, you can see that the development is proposing an access driveway to the side and rear of that terrace of four properties, which are the pink coloured block on the front of the site. And what this is proposing is essentially three dwellings to be built at the back half of the site, and providing off-road parking for all of the terrace properties in that area. Well, at the moment, there aren't any properties that have got any off-road parking, so in that sense, it's potentially a gain. But the issue there is, well, we're then developing into this back area, and how does that fix with the pattern of development, which you can see if you just flip back to page 52, is there's quite a varied pattern of development in this locality. So just moving forwards, just with the photos, I think the battery is absolutely shot, Chairman. Oh, it is there. All right. This is Vine Street, and it's showing a little bit of Coronation Street, isn't it? It's got that sort of feel to it. It's got the back edge of footpath. But what do you get a feel for here? You're in Vine Street. You're looking from west to east, and that's the end of Vine Street. It just stops. And it's not, you know, Plum Street's very similar, isn't it? It just stops. And so there's no turning facility. And you can see even at this time of the day, which is 10:34, and maybe some people have gone to work at this point, the cars are parked both sides. And if you've got more parking both sides, because none of these properties have really got any off-road parking, I think there might be the odd one or two. At times when everybody's at home or more cars are parked both sides, then that's your operable access. So it's really quite limited. Beyond it, you can see the profile of Walnut Green, which is a more modern development, which is accessed off Bowling Lane. So heading on towards the site, although most properties in the vicinity are two-storey on Vine Street, you've got the odd one that's a bit of an oddity. It's almost like a three-storey scale. And this is the first glimpse of the terrace of four that's located at the front of the site. And this is a view. This is probably one of the few properties, actually, that three-storey scale of property that I just showed you that's got its own off-road parking. Aside from that, none of these properties have got any off-road parking. And the access way would come in here and access towards the back of the site. You'll see at the back of the site, this is the back of a property on the plan that's shown as Athol Square. And I've got some more detailed photographs of this. Athol Square actually fronts onto Commercial Street, and this is the back of it, which is a totally obscured wall. It's about three stories high. Quite unusual relationship. And also, even at this point, you can see a glimpse of this stone property here, which is number three, which is the neighbouring property from where we have an objector. I think the neighbour's registered to speak tonight. Yeah. So this is what we're looking at. Just to add to the oddity here, these are effectively the back gardens of the terraces. The front gardens are the other, or the front entrances are the other side, which we'll show you in a moment. So this is almost looking at the end of Vine Street, looking back down Vine Street, and you can see this strangely, this property's evolved over the years. It's three stories at the front, then two stories, and then there's some single story bits on the back. And these are the fronts of the terraces that I just showed you. So this is the boundary. And the front doors are here. So it's a very strange arrangement of buildings. This is moving down past there. There's a bit of a boundary fence in this area here with some conifers. And this is the adjacent neighbouring property, which is a listed building. This building here is listed. And this is moving out into the developable part of the site. As you can see, it's all somewhat overgrown at the moment. And so although this property is aspected front rear parallel to the plot, you can see the substantial sash windows here, there are some secondary windows in this side-facing elevation here, which are effectively the plot boundary. And this is panning around, so you see the continuation of Athol Square. Again, the dwellings would be located in this area here, as shown on the application plan. This is panning round the site. This is a closer view of the back of Athol Square. So you get quite an imposing group of buildings, quite a large building. And this is the view from the back of the plot, looking back towards Vine Street. So here you've got the garden of the neighbouring property. That's the taller property that I just showed you on Vine Street, with a rather organic, polite word. Set of additions over the years, some two-storey flat roof things here, and this is the nearest terrace here. So this is the end of the fourth terrace building here, so the terrace of three would be sitting in this part of the site here. So where have we got to? The North Yorkshire Fire and Rescue have confirmed that from their point of view the dwellings would need to be fitted with sprinklers, and if the dwellings are fitted with sprinklers, then they would have no objection to the location from an emergency vehicle point of view, because that would address the building reg side of things. The Highway Authority have been advised of North Yorkshire Fire and Rescue comments and have no objection to the proposal, subject to planning conditions relating to the access crossing, a detailed construction management plan, and the parking spaces that are shown on the submitted plans, which is both for the existing and the proposed dwellings, remain available for that purpose. So the officer recommendation for this application is one of approval. Members will have picked up that it is outlined, so reserve matters would still be required for appearance, scale and the landscaping, and the usual materials are conditions that you'd expect us to recommend, of materials, landscaping, boundary details, ground surfacing materials, the three highway conditions that I've already mentioned, and then further details in relation to ground and finished floor levels. Informatives would also then be required to make sure that any developer in submitting their reserve matters approval submitted sprinkler systems for all of the dwellings. And so that's the recommendation, Chairman.
We do have a speaker, Angela Gare.
Thank you. I live in the cottage, the Grade 2 listed cottage next to the land, and it's, as you say, a very strange arrangement altogether, and my cottage abuts the land. So it's very difficult, because if I need to access that end of the building, I have a legal right of way onto the land, but it's quite difficult to actually access it. And as far as I can see from the plans, the access that I would have in order to effect repairs or whatever would be very narrow. It's very difficult to tell from the plans. And if I needed to put scaffolding up to repair the stonework or whatever, I don't think there would be enough space. But that's a minor point. Whilst I have no objection in principle to building on the land, I feel that three properties and no less than 10 parking spaces is way too much for such a small piece of land. And where the, although the plan is better than the first one that was put forward, I still feel that it is going to be very overbearing on the back of my property and also the neighbouring property, which is number one Scarborough Road, because the buildings will overshadow the gardens at the back and be very overbearing. And I think, from what I can see from the plans, they will actually come up to my window anyway, on the little windows at the side. And I'm very worried about all the parking spaces in terms of noise and pollution, especially early in the morning when people are going to work. And I don't, because it's grade two listed, I can't have double glazing, so, you know, it's going to be very noisy. I would have thought it would be better to put maybe a couple of bungalows or one-story cottages on that land with one parking space for each. As I say, it's not a very big piece of land at all. And I think it really ought to be taken into consideration. The demographic of the area is mainly older people. And I think if you have three houses on that site, you're going to have families moving in.
30 seconds left.
Okay. You're going to have families moving in and a lot more noise, disruption, etc. Plus the disruption of the building when it's going on, when we have two very old cottages right next to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Gary?
Yeah, just noting what the neighbour has just mentioned. I mean, clearly this is an outline application, so we're not looking at an application that's got all the details with it. You don't have the details of the scale and appearance of the dwellings, but clearly we have a situation here where I think the information we're getting from our own housing officers is that if there is a demand for small housing in Rydale, it's probably in Moulton and Norton. And so if we end up with a scheme where we're reducing numbers, then the pressure then ends up with the two dwellings probably ending up being bigger dwellings than the terrace of three. The plan that you see on page 53 is probably quite useful to look at in terms of the comments I'm about to make, in the sense that the sightings of the terrace of three that you're looking at there is showing a gap of around about 3 metres to the boundary. So from the side wall of what's shown as dwelling number three to number three is about 3 metres gap to the boundary. Now, landscaping still remains to be a reserved matter, and there are some rather diagrammatic blobs there. But, I mean, in terms of the planning issues, we have to deal with the planning issues as opposed to property law issues. But the building in that position wouldn't necessarily prevent access or prevent scaffolding or things of that nature, because there's a gap sufficient to show that. But we're dealing with planning law rather than property law, so any decision that we make tonight or any other time to grant a planning permission doesn't then override any property laws which might exist on a parcel of land. I think the speaker alluded to this being better to the earlier scheme, and there was a withdrawn application which you probably picked up from the officer report, which I think was an application for a terrace that continued the terrace of buildings that exist on the site. Just bear with me a moment. Which continued that terrace down. And that was actually going to have a built form that was running all the way parallel with the neighbouring boundary of the garden. And so in that sense, it was having a greater effect. That particular scheme was considered to have a greater effect. So that was withdrawn. for further discussions with officers to take place, and this is the resulting scheme, which is for three terrace properties but located more towards the rear of the site. So that's just a little bit of background information, that this wasn't the first pitch at how to develop the site, really.
Are there any questions for the officer? Okay, any questions? Now we'll go to debate. Mrs. Councillor Shields.
Thank you very much, Sharon. Well, this is quite one of the most extraordinary applications, and an extraordinary place at the bottom of Vine Street, because you've actually got to go down Vine Street, and then you've got to immediately turn right at the end when you think you've come to the end of it and there's just a wall ahead of you. Then you have to turn right, and there are these four cottages, numbers 36 up to 42. It's the owner of 42 who has put in the application. There's a very narrow entrance, and this means that any further buildings back on this site, which is relatively small, are all going to have their cars coming back down past the four houses that exist already. It's quite difficult enough for people getting to and fro out of here as it is. Vine Street, the photograph he has taken at 10:15 or whatever it was, Gary, in the morning, will only show you, you know, random houses and so on. You go down there from about 4:30, 5:00 onwards, and certainly the whole of the evening and most of the weekends, it is chock-a-block from end to end, from both sides of cars. I noticed that the fire people, you said, proposed sprinklers. Sprinklers, I don't think, would be much good if you got an ambulance down there, quite frankly, because the cars will be on the opposite side and there is no turning place. There really is not. I'm really tempted, though I know this quite well, and I went round it again this morning to have a look at this, to say that unless members are really very well acquainted with this, you ought to look at it. You see, what you've got here, and I've got on page 53, and you will presumably have as well, looks a nice straightforward piece of land, doesn't it? And you know, right, we can put three houses down there and it'll be all right, it'll go past the others. But you really ought to have a better idea of what is being involved. Part of a garden is going to have to be taken out as well in order to allow the space at the side there. And I have sympathy with number three on the Scarborough Road too, who is going to be so very close to these buildings at the back. The town council debated it for a long while. I was there. And as you say, they were bothered about the traffic. They're also bothered about particular vehicles. They didn't mention ambulance, I don't think, but I mean, it's one that has to be considered, particularly if you're saying that there are going to be perhaps older people there. There are a lot of older people who live down there, but if you get families or something because they need the smaller houses, well then it could be quite difficult. And it's very difficult because it's got this great wall at the end. It just comes to a stop, and you think if you stand at the front of the road and look down, you couldn't tell there was anything else there. And so you need to really go and look at it. I'm really very concerned about this. I think that whilst you're saying, yes, okay, Norton and Moulton, mostly at Norton at the moment, I know Lindsay's had a whole lot of stuff in her area now, but Norton has had hundreds and hundreds of houses everywhere you can put them. And I think that three definitely on this site will be too many. Just squeezing them in, you know, is not what we should be doing. Two would be sufficient for what is, in fact, quite a narrow strip of land. I really feel, you know, that we ought to have a look at it, or unless you're well acquainted with it. I think probably Lindsay may be acquainted with it, but I doubt whether many others. If I'm doing you an injustice, I apologise. It really is a very strange place to try and put houses in, and at the most I would have thought two was sufficient. I'm not happy with this at all at the moment.
Councillor Mrs. Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. How deceiving things can look on paper. When I saw this, I was absolutely aghast with it. An absolute, and I normally support Gary, you in everything. This is totally and utterly wrong. Absolute classic land grab, build anywhere. We'll start with the photographs. The photographs that are shown. If you were very, very lucky to get that photograph, because that is not how Vine Street is represented. They are bumper to bumper, morning, noon and night, apart from an odd occasion. So, Gary, you were very, very lucky getting that. Whoever got that, that I... Honestly, that is not showing you what Vine Street is typically like. Bumper to bumper... Bumper to bumper, scrape your car, take it at your own peril, whatever. There's not only houses down there with children. There are older people, there are families, there are flats, there are HMOs. There are cars and cars and cars. And it is the most complained about street in Norton. I can tell you that. It's the most complained about street. I know Vine Street. 20 years ago, I lived there. When those houses were built, those houses were very, very nice, and I don't think people had cars. And it's not as it used to be, obviously. We all know we need houses, but surely not at any detriment. As Councillor Shield said, it's a dead-end cul-de-sac. It's a street, like I've said, not fit for the cars that are on it, not to even try and squeeze more cars down to then go down and park. As I say, we struggled 20 years ago, and it's even more packed now. When I actually lived down Vine Street, there was a house fire, and I witnessed it. And it was absolutely horrendous. And the vehicles couldn't get down. And maybe the sprinklers would be nice. And wouldn't that be all jolly? But as I say, it's a potential threat, death threat, I don't know what. But it certainly is not a place to be building more houses. We've already talked about North York County Council. And yeah, that's fine. We'll build that, that's fine. But... What do we say? We're not the experts, but you need to talk to people who actually live down there. And do we really, as a committee, want to be cramming these houses in and saying, oh, didn't we do well? Look at Vine Street. Look what we've made it into, this committee. Look what we've done to it. We're desperate for houses. I know we are, but surely not at any cost, really. I mean, three more dwellings is just absolutely over the top. I don't think there should be any more dwellings down there. I think it's saturated, and I certainly won't be supporting it. I'd even move refusal. But anyway, you take it at your own risk, because, as I say, I've got personal experience, and Vine Street is not the place that we should be building houses. You can build them in Moulton, you can build them in Norton, but don't build them down there, because it's a sure risk. So I will move refusal, actually, because I certainly won't be supporting it.
Thank you. Councillor Andrews.
I have never been down Vine Street. When I looked at the plans, alarm bells did start ringing. And when I've seen the photographs, it's not so much... the houses, it's getting the cars to the houses. I couldn't support support this. I agree with Councillor Burr on that. I don't think anything should go in there. I think it's nice to have little pockets. I mean, I know it's a very green area, but it seems to be quite unloved. But to have little pockets of space between houses, as we've seen in the planning applications earlier, when you've carved things up and put buildings on, and then you know it causes tensions, and I know that isn't a planning consideration, but I think access to a site, and like Councillor Shield said, yes, we can have sprinklers, but if somebody needs an ambulance, to get an ambulance down there, and I think it's just trying to get a pint into a half pint, well, less than a half pint pot, and I can't support this.
Councillor Mrs Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. I have to say quite openly, I haven't made up my mind yet on this one. I'm still open to debate. But I do think we have to be very careful about the uniformed of the decision-making of this committee. You know, first of all, the fire authority have said there isn't a problem, and as Lindsay pointed out before, we may not always agree with them, but if this goes to appeal, then they are the expert witnesses, and we don't have, you know, we don't have a choice. So we're like the other application, we're held over a barrel here. The photograph, we're told, is bumper to bumper because it's taken at a certain time of the day, but then with other applications we have to look at the time of the day that the speeding was done. So we have to be careful about, you know, what we're saying. I mean, a question is, have Highways actually objected to this? So, you know, before I can vote on, because obviously somebody's going to second this and we're going to have to vote on refusal, I'd like to know on what planning grounds we are refusing this against the Office of Recommendation. Thank you.
I think the only... Could I just come back and just clarify the point? I did mention it, but it may have been lost in me mentioning it. But the local highway authority have not objected on the basis of what the fire and rescue response was, and so they have recommended a conditional approval. And so if what I'm picking up from this side of the room is, well, actually, the main concern is about the access to and from the site, then to just simply refuse it for access grounds is dangerous territory. I thought I was hearing Mrs. Shields suggest that she knew the site, but you rest of us might not know it as well, and I was half expecting you to be recommending a site inspection. That's what I thought you were going to say. I mean, that's certainly, and I don't want to prejudge any final decision that's made by the planning committee, but if that was the case, then at least in an appeal situation, if that's the eventual decision, then at least you've taken the opportunity to go and see things on the ground. I have no idea, because I can't remember the last time I went down Vine Street, whether that's representative of Vine Street or not. All I can tell you is the planning officers didn't wait for a phone call to say, oh, hold on a minute, there aren't many cars parked in Vine Street today, let's go and do the site inspection. That was done at the time that the site was visited, and that was what was on the street. I know full well if I go there at 6 o'clock at night, there'll be a lot of people at home, and there'll be more cars there. So, you know, you have to, you know, we work 9 to 5, you know, so sometimes we will be there, and we're there early in the morning or later at night when more people are at home. It just happened to be that was at 10:30 in the morning, and that's when those photographs were taken. But it's something that rings alarm bells when the only sort of professional advice that we're getting on an access issue is one of, well, you know, I don't think any of them would say this is a perfect solution, but they're saying, what's the recommendation? The recommendation is not to refuse it on highway safety grounds or access grounds. Now, we're the planning committee. At the end of the day, we've got to make a balanced planning decision, but I am a little concerned about tonight refusing an application on what's primarily an access issue. May not be just an access issue if you've seen the site. You might be concerned about impacts on listed buildings or other things. But that's the fundamental issue, is one of access, when we don't have any other view on the table other than one of a conditional support.
Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. Let's have a site visit. I'd like to propose a site visit.
Right, I'll second that then.
That was Councillor Shields seconding a site visit. Sorry, Councillor Hope.
Can I suggest that we all take a car each and then we'll know what's going on?
Okay, well, it's been moved and seconded for a site visit, so I will take that to the vote, please. That has been agreed. We will have a site visit. We'll confirm the date of the site visit. Okay. Thank you. We're moving on to agenda item 11, which is the application at Rillington Village Hall, 2-8 Scarborough Road, Rillington.
Thank you, Chairman. I've no updates with this particular application. As you'll see, it's retrospective, but it is for the retention of an existing detached shed within the grounds of Rillington Village Hall. And I think, although you've got some plans showing the location of the hall is essentially at the crossroads of the A64 and High Street and Low Moorgate there. The building in question is located in the far corner of the hall grounds, the village hall grounds. So in that sense, it's not particularly an issue in terms of the public perception of the building. In our estimation. However, the building is retrospective and we have received an objection to the application, which is why it's before you tonight. I think the objector's registered to speak. I think what would help if I showed you some photographs of the building in question. And that's it. So if you're able to look at page 62. This is in the corner of the application site, and it's adjacent to the neighbouring property, which you can see in the background there. So that wall is the boundary wall, and this is part of the neighbouring property's garden. And the floor level of the neighbouring property is slightly higher than the application site. Originally, as I understand it, this is a building that's replaced two existing timber sheds that were on the site, was this, which is essentially a tank that I think when it was installed, the installer said, hold on a minute, you've got timber sheds next to this tank, you should be putting something else up that's not necessarily going to combust. And so this is the building, which, as you can see, is rather utilitarian in its form. It's a metal sort of building. And that is it. So it's got a slightly darker roof than the walls. It's used for storing equipment. And this is a view of it front on. So again, this is around the back of the hall, in the far corner of the hall. You see the profile of the nearest building on High Street, which is number one in the background. And this again is the nearest part of the neighbouring property. And you can see here the trellis fencing. So that, if you can just picture that in your mind's eye, because I'll show you some photographs in it in a few moments, taken from within the curtilage of the neighbouring property. And so that's just taken from the side. And this is panning across. So this is the neighbouring dwelling house, which is actually accessed off the A64. So on your plan, it's numbered as number 10. And you can see this is a typical sort of brick and rendered and tiled house, conservatory on the back, and some ancillary buildings within the curtilage, including a shed and greenhouse. Now this is the view from within the neighbouring property, and as you can see, this is the trellis fence that I was just referring you to, and this is the roof of the structure beyond it. So at this point, you can still see through the holes in the trellis. the sort of walls, but it's at that bit lower level. And these are the fences, the adjacent shed and greenhouse. This roof profile here is the village hall itself. So that's on the corner. And that's probably a better view, really, at the corner. So you get a feel for how the levels are changing here. So this floor level here is higher than the hall level. And that's just looking back. So that's the boundary wall I was showing you on the first photo. And that's it, Chairman. Obviously we've had an objection from the neighbour, that's why the application's before you tonight.
I've got registered to speak, Mr. McGill.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John McGill and I'm accompanied here with my wife Carol. We note that the recommendation from planning to this committee is to accept this retrospective application. We wish to emphasise we are most affected by this construction and may be sole objectors to it. Nonetheless, we feel the objections raised are creditable and without prejudice. My wife and I have previously submitted comprehensive written objections to the committee. However, we would like to emphasise that this structure is an assault on our eyes and well-being from every part of our property because of its size, its starkness, white colour and height, which is over 3 metres high. It dominates the view and I defy anyone seeing it not to agree with that point. We have highlighted how the structure is having a real and detrimental impact on our right to use and enjoy our garden as an amenity. Its current adverse visual impact from all aspects of our property, both inside and out, feeling of being hemmed in, enclosure and overshadowing, will only worsen in winter when plants die back. The stark white metal cladding of the structure makes it less of a shed and more like an industrial building, with its height causing glare on bright days. Since moving to our property in 1984, we have seen our privacy and the amenity of our garden diminish over the years, exacerbated more by the erection of the structure. Although not taken into account by the planning process, we wish to make the committee aware of the continual distress, the upset and the anguish caused to both of us by the structure. All this could have been avoided if consideration had been given and discussions taken place between all parties involved prior to anything happening and possibly coming to a compromise. We appeal, therefore, to this committee to examine the aforementioned points and our written submission, recognising its impact on us. Before favouring the recommendation from planning, may we request prior to decision that the committee consider possible amendments, namely, 1, change the colour of the structure, for example, to that similar to the door, or 2, lower the height of the roof. Such an amendment would lessen the structure's dominance, represent a compromise not only between the parties due to the benefit of the immediate area and also help with looking at the traditional Victorian building. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Okay, we'll go into debate. Does anybody want to take this one? Councillor Burr.
Sorry, I'm not this way out tonight, but I think that gentleman has every right to complain about that. I can't believe that's just been plonked there. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, it just doesn't fit in. It's not natural. I mean, I just can't understand why it's there. And if that had probably come to committee, I'm sure I wouldn't have approved that. I know that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but I personally wouldn't like that at the end of my garden. There is a compromise, I guess, you know, to do as I like and paint it all down and make it not look like this particular industrial estate at the back of one's garden. I feel that gentleman had every right to come and voice his opinion on that.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews.
Thank you. While the gentleman was speaking, I was writing down, could we recommend a paint job? I have every sympathy with the neighbours. I think possibly, as Gary mentioned, when you've got this thing next to it that says this could explode and your garden shed's going to go up, they probably, you know, you wouldn't necessarily replace it like for like, and would put something in there that is going to be a lot safer. However, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but they probably should have contacted the neighbours to say that the reason for them changing the shed. Do people have to have planning permission to put sheds up normally? Is it because it's bigger or higher or...?
There are extensive permitted development rights for ancillary buildings
right.
which apply in the main to domestic property.
Right.
So if that was a domestic property, not a village hall, it wouldn't need planning permission.
Right.
In all probability.
Right.
Many permitted development rights relate to residential property, and those rights have changed and varied over the years, but we're in a deregulation sort of situation where a lot of things in back gardens don't need planning permission. But because this is not a dwelling, there are no permitted development rights for village halls as such, so we know this needed planning permission. And I guess over the years, there are probably many and numerous village halls which have got a little timber storage shed that they've never applied for planning permission for, but it's been more like that sort of shed looking at there.
Yeah.
And I think, look at the background as to how we've got to where we've got to. They've gone away, replaced what I understood to be two smaller wooden sheds with one purpose-designed metal shed, which is
health and safety.
Well, it's safer and it's more secure and all the rest of it, but it's bigger and it has this appearance. I think the issue that we're dealing with here is one of we have to plan in the public interest. And unfortunately, I haven't got any photographs to show you from any public vantage points, but you can hardly see it. So what we're dealing with here really is view and things of that nature, which of course we know people don't have a right to a view. And so it's getting into very, very dodgy territory. Yeah. The issue we also have is we're dealing with a retrospective application. So we're right. You know, this was proposed and we went through the normal process that we go through. And I know that always sticks in members' throats. Yes. But we have to deal with it on its planning merits, planning in the public interest. And so when you take into account the difference in levels, when you take into account, which in my opinion is you're looking at the darker, more subdued colour of the building there from the neighbour's point of view, yes, you can see through the trellis, but you're getting an obscured view already. It's not like you're getting, the neighbour is not getting that view. It's not getting, that view is within the yard of the village hall and nowhere else.
Yeah.
And so that's the issue. I think, to my mind, the subdued colour in terms of the background is the roof and the framework around it. What you notice in that photograph is the light coloration of the wall. So I don't know whether that clad metal will take a paint. Some will, some won't. But if it was a darker colour, it would recede more. So you're talking about the paint job.
That's where you came in.
That may be a possibility. Yeah. If members thought, well, if that was darker, it would be less obvious. Then that's a condition one could apply to a planning permission if you were minded to retain it for all other reasons.
Yeah, I'm sort of mindful of the fact that the garden is higher, which goes in the neighbour's favour, in that we've seen recent application where. A shed or something is going to be erected that's higher and it is quite tough. So, as far as planning, as far as views go and extensions or sheds and that, this is not too bad to what we have seen or my time on the planning committee. But, I mean, I would like to see the white or the very light colour knocked back with a darker colour. I think, as the neighbours sort of suggested, something the door colour and hope that sort of relationships would be resolved.
That's an option that's open to you as a planning committee tonight. If the only thing you were aggrieved about was the colour of the walls because you felt they were too bright or white or whatever, we can impose a planning condition here that says within 1 month you shall submit a colour and a colour to be agreed for the painting of the walls, and within another month paint it. That can be a condition on a planning permission if that's your only issue. If you think that's wrong, lock, stock and barrel, that's wrong, then you refuse the application tonight. I know what the outcome of that will be. We'll get an appeal and we won't win it. So yes, I know you know that. So you've got some options. You accept it as it is, you look to vary it, or you refuse it. Now, our recommendation in the public interest is you accept it, but that's the debate for you.
Did you want to come back?
The thing is with it, presumably if we said, I mean, obviously they would go to appeal, but probably better to have something like that at the end of the garden. That's something else that could be dangerous, in that if they, you know, there were wooden sheds there, so, and they do need storage. I mean, I know I manage the, for want of a better word, the village hall in Pickering, and we haven't got enough storage, so there does need to be something there, and probably that's the best thing if it was just dulled a bit.
Councillor Mrs Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Like my colleague, Councillor Burr, says, retrospective applications are never pleasant. And if it had come to us, we probably would have conditioned it so that it didn't have such a detrimental impact on the neighbour. But I don't know a village hall in the land that doesn't have storage problems and needs a shed. I've not come across it, and it's a difficult one. The shed is there, and it will be difficult to either say move it, take it away. I don't think we'd win, but I do think that certainly, as Councillor Andrew suggested, it can be painted a different colour, or in fact it could be screened better than it is at the moment, because it looks as though, does that wall run halfway up the side of that? Could we not put a better screening on top of that wall to protect the neighbours a bit, and certainly a bit of screening across there, because it's very stark and very white.
Okay, thank you.
So I think it, you know,
Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. It's nearly all been answered what I was going to ask. Do we know what size the old sheds were before this one was put there?
I haven't got any precise information, but I think they were your convention, two smaller, what I would describe as garden style sheds. A bit like that one is what I understood them to be.
Like the green
two.
Ones?
But there were two of them. There were two of them. I mean, but they weren't quite as tall.
This one in question, you could actually, to screen it, put trellising on top of the wall.
I don't think they'd have room to do that. The trellis, to the extent that we'd probably want the applicant to do the trellis, is already there. It's on the neighbour's garden.
That's on nothing, that side. But
there's nothing growing up it at the moment that does anything other than, well, I say nothing growing up it, but you can see through the holes in the trellis.
Yeah, you could, yeah.
But the planting for that is on the neighbour's side,
yeah.
And there's no room really to effectively plant anything that would succeed on the boundary there. You know, there's no space.
Yeah, well, I'll go with Councillor Andrew's thing. It needs a paint job.
Councillor Mrs Shields.
Didn't we actually give permission for it to be in metal and like that? Or has it not had permission at all and just gone up like that? Right. Well, in that case, yes. Let's paint it somehow.
Councillor Mrs. Burr.
So maybe to move things on then, accept it as it is, insist on it being painted out, and insist that it's got some more screening on it. Well, then the village hall could pay for the neighbours to have some. No, that would be good. Yeah. That would be good. But the neighbours could maybe screen it and plant something up there to get rid of that. But yeah, exactly. But they shouldn't be. They have to do that. It should have been the applicants that should have. Exactly. But that's a compromise, and we'll move on from that, and that's the best we're going to get. But so I'd move that. So I don't know if that's.
Councillor Andrews, are you happy to second that? So it's been moved and seconded for recommendation of approval with an additional condition with regards to the paperwork.
I will come up with the wording of it, but I think it's something along the lines of within so many weeks to submit a detail of a paint for the walls of a more recessive colour to be submitted and approved and then carried out within a time period.
And that is the whole building, not just obviously the bit that we're looking at now.
No, I'm talking about the walls, the light coloured
walls.
Alright,
that as well, yeah.
Okay, so that has been moved and seconded, so I'll put that to the vote.
That has been approved.
Well, we haven't had the. It's gone. Probably left. Have we voted?
You
had approved. Yeah.
Lovely. We'll move to agenda item 12, which is an enforcement report with regards to land off Wellham Road, Norton.
Thank you, Chairman. Nothing to add to the report on this particular one. I do have some photographs which might be of assistance to members who aren't perhaps familiar with the location, although I'd hope the plan on page 71 gives you an indication of where the encampment is in relation to the built-up area of Norton. So you just beyond the built-up area of Wellham Road and the Whitewall Junction. Not as far as the entrance to the Whitewall Quarry, but the site is pretty much opposite the southern extent of the excavation of the quarry. So in landscape terms, you're going up the hill as you go out of town. And in terms of the location, I just thought this was sort of a view from the small lane that's over to southwest, and you're looking back across towards Wellham. This is the hedgerow that's going across Wellham Hill and Wellham Road. The actual development is beyond the brow of that from this direction, but I thought it would set it in the context, because a lot of this planting here is what screens the quarry, so you can't really see the quarry from that direction. This is where I parked this morning and captured the stray bull mastiff that was running across the road. At that point you think, is it friendly or is it angry? It was from there. And it was friendly. It was slobberingly friendly, unfortunately. And this at this time of the year is probably the best or most immediate view of the encampment. So you've got the hedgerows adjacent to Wellham Road. So you're just going across Wellham Road and then you dip down into the town And at this point, at this time of the year, the hedgerow is obviously in full leaf, so you've got quite good screening at this point here. But as soon as you go into the site, then you can see the first caravan, and there's more of it as you go into the site. This is a view actually taken from the road that leads to Wellham Hall. So if you're going down there, there's a group of buildings at the end of there, and there's quite a view open. And some of the existing buildings have been on the site for some time, so they're exempt from control. They've been there, I think, the landowners, but the landowner has basically allowed the caravans and the encampment to go on the site itself. And this is it a bit closer to. So you see it's quite tucked in behind the hedgerow, but that's where it is. And we're recommending that we take enforcement action. So that's where we are. Sorry, Mrs. Shields.
Does any questions for the?
Yeah.
You've got a question, Mrs. Shields.
Yes, I have. Yes.
Yep.
Can I ask that we actually accept the recommendation without wasting too much time on this? Yep. It's really quite disgraceful.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Andrews.
Sorry to ask. I think I read that it started since January. Are these, or do we know if they're local people, or are they likely to move on anyway? Right. Right. Yeah, I just wondered if they would go of their own. I mean, I think we should have the info, but I didn't know whether they were permanent.
Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
I don't disagree with my colleagues across the room, but actually, you know, I have a not dissimilar situation on Greenbelt at Gate Helmsley, where we have a traveller unit who shouldn't be there, and we've had to let them stay until the children have finished education. And I. Okay, these are not homeschooled?
These are.
These are? Well, mine were. No, they were homeschooled. They are not. I can assure this committee, they are not in school.
All I'll say is it will come out at the appeal, because they have appealed the enforcement notice. So I think we're probably looking at a hearing or an inquiry at some point coming up. So when I know more, I'll obviously let you know about that. But they have appealed the enforcement notice because, well, there's no reason not to, you know, it's one of those things. But I'm sure the inspector will be asking those sorts of questions. But obviously the big difference, I suppose, with that one was the Greenbelt location. Although they have disputed it's in Greenbelt. So we'll have that row as well. Might as well dispute everything.
Okay, it's been moved by Mrs. Shields, and I'll second it from the chair. That we accept the recommendation. So I'll put that to the vote. It has been agreed to take enforcement action. Agenda item 13 is the list of applications determined under delegated powers. Agenda item 14 is a recent appeal decision. Gary, is there anything you'd like to say on that?
The blacksmiths. In fact, the blacksmiths is listed as an asset of community value, and we were going through that process of the moratorium, but I received an email last week from the owner saying she'd taken the property off the market. So I'm just checking with Anthony what the implications of that are with regard to moratorium periods. To my mind, it means that, well, it's stopped, and if it starts again, it starts again. But that's the first one we've ever come across that's been in that situation, which is a shame, because I think the locals were actually gathering to purchase. You know, watch this space. So it was a good decision, I thought, in that sense. Good to see the success.
Okay, thank you. That is the end of the agenda. We just have to confirm the date of the site visit, which will be the 15th of.
For both, I think.
August for the, and we'll do the tree preservation or the working group that day also, but we'll do the site visit first, yeah. And then meet back here to do, yeah. The
I'm just guided by the local members here who are quite passionate about Vine Street and its parking ailments. A best time to start, would you suggest? Well, it feels as though Vine Street ought to be the first site visit, and then whoever's remained to go on to the tree preservation order working party then goes on, because that's in Moulton. It's sited in Moulton, so it's close by. But it just feels as though sometimes we're unsure what time to carry out a site inspection, and obviously we're somewhat hampered by the, you know, when we're here it's sort of usually 9 to 5-ish. We're maybe going to be not hitting. Pete, but I'm in your hands on that. I mean, the sooner we are to the start of the day, I would have thought the better. But
yeah.
Well, I would park somewhere nearby. Yeah.
Could park if you can't get on Commercial Street, you could probably go into the library, Norton Hive.
Well, on doing site visits in Commercial Street, I've generally not had a problem parking at that end of Commercial Street. If there's a parking issue, it's down at the other shops. End where most of the shops are. Yeah.
So yeah. What kind of time would you suggest? Anybody making a suggestion?
Well, it doesn't matter to officers. We can be there at 9 o'clock if you want it, because that's earlier than you'd normally meet. But with 10 o'clock, half 10, we can see the streets half empty, you know. So I don't want to be criticised that we go in mid-morning when everybody's...
Nine o'clock.
Nine.
We'll go for nine.
And
yep.
Then move on to the other one afterwards.
And then we'll move on to the other one. And Councillor Goodrick would like to give her apologies for the site visit. Okay. So I'll therefore close the meeting. Thank you very much for your time and have a safe journey home.